Well, good day to you. It's Joel with For King Country dropping in to let you know that our brand new film, Unsung Hero, is in theaters now.
It's Luke here. We've teamed up with the creators of Jesus Revolution to bring you this adventure of a lifetime. It's a powerful, true story about a family uniting, growing in their faith, and facing the impossible together.
In theaters now, unsunghero.movie for more information.
Rated PG. Parental guidance suggested.
It had nothing to do with not being wildly attracted to my wife. I think sometimes wives feel this guilt that somehow like they're not enough and that's why their husband went to porn. But porn affects men and women. It's not just a male issue, it's men and women. And it has nothing to do with their spouses not doing something. It's,
right.
It's a sin that each one that, of us that falls into, we fall into it through our own sin. And we wound the people around us, we wound our spouse, but it's certainly never a spouse's fault that you fall into porn.
Are you ready to talk to me? My name is Deborah Falada, and I'm a licensed professional counselor, national speaker, and author. Through my blog, books, and podcast, I have the privilege of helping millions of people get healthy mentally, emotionally, spiritually, and relationally. The purpose of this podcast is to have on-air, authentic, counseling-style sessions where we talk about how people are really doing and give my guests and callers an opportunity to talk to me as a licensed professional counselor. Each of these episodes is meant to show you that we are all on the journey of healing, mentally, emotionally, spiritually, and relationally, together. None of us are immune to the challenges and struggles of life, but we don't have to walk this path alone. I'm so proud and honored to be having these conversations with men and women who are courageously paving the way for open and honest conversations about their personal journey of healing. So if you're ready, let's talk. It is February, which means our couples therapy sessions are rolling back out. I'm so excited about these on-air conversations with real-life couples. We're pulling back the curtain on marriage and showing you the raw, real, authentic side that's going on behind the scenes in everyday life. These courageous couples are joining me on the podcast to talk about their relationship, their struggles, and ways they want to strengthen their marriage. So join us this month of February for Couples on Air Therapy. Here we go. Today on the podcast, I'm so excited to have some friends joining me. You may have heard of them before. You may recognize their names if you like marriage ministry and the marriage space. Today, I've got Dave and Ashley Willis joining me. It's so good to have you guys.
Thanks for having us.
Thanks for having us.
Listen, I think I'm most excited about this conversation because, you know, when you're in marriage ministry, it's not often that you get to have like on-air couples counseling in front of everybody. So I'm like ready
no
to
pressure.
Dig in.
Yeah. Hey, it's good.
Yeah. We're excited.
Yes.
This will be good for us. So
yeah.
It'll be good for the listeners too.
That's
so
right.
For those who are listening, who aren't familiar with you and your work and your passions, tell us a little bit about yourselves.
Well, we are Dave and Ashley Willis. We've been married 22 years. We're originally from Kentucky, met in college. So we're college sweethearts. And Dave's 2 years older than me, but we literally met my first day of college, got married the week after Dave graduated, and then I was still in school. And it's been so much fun. We're in ministry. Dave's a pastor, and we are part of the team at XO Marriage. We have four boys ranging in ages 8 to 18, so we just launched our first child to college this past August, and it's just so much fun. We have a really good time together.
Yeah, it's a lot of fun. Not always easy.
Very busy.
It's busy.
Yeah.
But it's a lot of fun. And
it
so
is.
we're in a good season.
I don't think I knew that Dave was a pastor.
Yes, he's a teaching pastor.
Yeah. So I mean, we're full-time in marriage ministry. That's our main thing. But I was a full-time pastor before we got into it. And
wow.
then now I'm back in it again as just a part-time teaching pastor. So at our home church, I still preach regularly. But what we're doing full-time is the marriage stuff, which we both really have a passion for.
So now I'm even more excited because it's like you get to dive into the pastor's baggage. This is great.
Oh, there's a lot that comes with that.
Yeah, I've got all different kinds of baggage. Oh my gosh. Like there's the whole, like the baggage claim at the airport.
Well, to be honest with you, I mean, even when I met Dave, I remember very quickly, he told me that he felt like God had called you to the ministry. Like you knew that distinctly. He remembers the moment. And so he was known on campus. We went to a small Christian school, Georgetown College in central Kentucky. And he was known on campus as being one of the, you know, good preacher guys. And in his fraternity, they had these late night things, Lambda Chi Alpha Devos. And Dave would preach there sometimes, and he would preach it. I remember would preach at a chapel service.
I had no idea what I was doing.
So early I still don't really, but
I love it.
That was back when it was still like cool to say you want to be a pastor. I think in the 90s, it was like 80% of people respected as a whole pastors. And now it's something like 30%. I saw. So we're doing about as well as Blockbuster Video in terms of ministry respect. But it's still a joy to get to be part of a church. And
yeah, we love it.
And I'm thrilled that even though we're doing the marriage ministry stuff full time, that I still have a little space there. That's been good for me.
Yeah.
So you guys have always known that you were going to be in ministry in some way, shape, or form. I mean, that was kind of on the table. You were Christians from a young age. You were serving God in college. So my guess is you had a really low expectation that marriage could be difficult. Marriage could blow up. Marriage could get to a place that was really hard, because a lot of us think, well, if we're doing everything that God calls us to do, if we're serving Him, if we're Christians, we're going to naturally be good at this marriage thing. So clearly that's not your story. So tell us, walk us through the season in your marriage where you both kind of realized like, this is bad.
Oh man. Yeah. Do you want to start, honey?
Yeah, gosh. I mean, we were
kind of out of the gate, right out of the gate.
Yeah. I mean, our dating was great. You know, we really connected on every level. Like we were great friends just right away. We just connected. We wanted to be together all the time. There was no real conflict through dating. Now, maybe part of the reason why there wasn't conflict is I was keeping a secret because I didn't want to do anything to make her feel like I wasn't Mr. Perfect. And the secret that I was keeping is that I'd had a struggle with pornography, like an on again, off again struggle that I'd never fully been able to kick. And I didn't want her to know that that had been part of my past, that that in some ways it was, I don't remember exactly during the dating season if I was falling into it then, but it had been a very real part of my past and I didn't want her to know about it. And so instead of inviting her into that journey with me and saying, hey, full disclosure, you know, I've had this struggle. I really need accountability in this area. I didn't want to plant that seed in her mind. And so I dealt with it in the sinful and prideful way, which is just to not say anything and try to deal with it on her own. So early into our marriage, when we started dealing with just stresses, we had some really intense in-law pressures because we were the first from either family to get married and we were young. And I don't think either family was really ready for us to be married the way that we felt ready. And we experienced a great deal of tension and we didn't have the life experience to know how to set boundaries. You know, Ashley, fairly early on, you know, fell into a season of anxiety and depression. We tried to navigate that. And I fell back into a season of secret pornography use that just was kind of wrecking me on the inside, because I knew as a Christian married man that, you know, it's when Jesus said to look with lust is to commit adultery in your heart. And I hated myself. I had all this shame and guilt. And then she found that and we, you know, that came to the surface and we started the process of really working through that. But I would say in that journey of coming through the kind of the healing from pornography, trying to restore broken trust that I'd created through that sin, working with anxiety and depression, with just the very difficult in-law situations. And then, you know, the birth of our first son, which kind of coincided in all of that. And then there was a deep postpartum depression too. And then there was financial pressure because we were broke. And there was a period of several years where we both, I think, just felt like we were just trying to keep our heads above water and thinking, man, when we got married, we were thinking, oh, I can't wait for the next 70 years or whatever. But then we got to a place where we still meant those vows, but it's like, I don't know how we're going to make it to the end of the week. Not like we were going to run out on each other, but just life was so hard. Like I didn't know how we were going to get to the end of the day just with life in general. So it was a difficult time.
It was.
About how many years into marriage would you say you faced this season?
Well, honestly, I would say, I mean, literally, we got home from our honeymoon, and I won't go into the details out of respect for the parties involved, but we got home from our honeymoon, went to one set of our parents' house and to open gifts because we were so excited to go on the honeymoon. We like took off. And literally that day, the battle of power is what I would call it, and allegiance started happening. And yeah. I had no idea what I was in for.
It literally
blindsided me. And I'm telling you, I cried multiple times a week for 5 years straight, I would say. Yeah. I mean, literally just a wreck. We found ourselves very quickly in a counseling office. I remember at that time, we were really involved at our church as we always have been, and we didn't know who to talk to there. And so our families too, like Dave's, your mom, you know, has counseling training. And so she was very counseling friendly, but I don't, you know, back in those days, people weren't as open about talking about going to counseling. And I remember even talking a little bit about it with my parents. It was like, no, you only go there if you're like just really messed up. And I'm thinking, well, I am really messed up. Like we are really messed up here. We need help.
And we try to, now just a side note, like we believe everybody benefits from counseling.
Gosh.
Ashley's
absolutely
following in Deborah's footsteps, getting a counseling degree.
That's right.
We think everyone can benefit from it. So
yeah,
just want to make sure we're communicating. We don't believe in that. That's
No. Yeah. But even back then, even though there was a stigma, Deborah, I Dave and I both were like, this is well beyond what we know how to handle. And so we went to a counselor. The very first book he gave us was Boundaries, you know, that age old great book that's been out forever by Townsend and Cloud. And honestly, it was eye opening for us because we were like, we don't know how to do this. We both are firstborns, very driven people, but also, and this isn't necessarily always a firstborn thing, but we are both pleasers by nature. And in fact, we went to a counselor together to learn how to set boundaries with in-laws, but also I ended up at a counselor for myself with my anxiety and depression. And one of the biggest things that my counselor focused on is my just need to please and wanting, you know, having that performance, like, I want to make you like me. I want to please you. I want to meet that, you know, and I didn't realize what a big thing that was in my life. I call myself like a recovering people pleaser because I still struggle with that sometimes. And that, you know, when you have someone in your life from your family who you love dearly, but trying to do this power play with you as a newlywed and you're a pleaser by nature, you talk about the perfect storm.
Yeah, it really
was.
And
it just sent me deeper and deeper into depression.
And both of us, I think, not being equipped really to know how to navigate that. We were both, me especially, I think self-medicating in unhealthy ways. Like, I mean, we were eating all the time. Like we both gained weight. Yeah, I'd go to happy hour. I never really felt like I had like a drinking problem, but I was looking back during that season of the happy hours of the potato skins and the beers. And I was drinking, I'm sure, at an unhealthy level too, and just gaining weight. And then I think really the pornography was probably just,
it was
not to make excuses for it, but I do think that it was kind of just a really toxic form of self-medication.
Yeah.
Cause we both just, we were like,
we were losing it.
And we were doing some things healthy. It was kind of this parallel track, you know, we were volunteering with the youth group and really getting involved and trying to serve in the church. And, you know, we were doing, you know, we were trying to prioritize our marriage. I felt like there were some things we were doing really healthy, but it was just this really weird dichotomy of healthy stuff going on, but then some really unhealthy stuff happening at the same time. And so, and when you've got that sideways energy pulling you in an unhealthy direction, you're going to have all that God wants for you.
I think that's actually sometimes what makes seeking out help harder is when you do have some healthy. Because it's like, well, look at this side of my life. At least we've got this right. Like we're still doing some things well. So it's easier to ignore all of the things that aren't well until they start to take over everything. And it happens slowly, you know. But honestly, when I think about what keeps couples from counseling, I think it's because they tend to put more emphasis on what they are doing well and less emphasis on what they are not doing well.
Eventually
the scale tips and it just starts
starts to take over every other part of your life. So there's a lot of self-medicating, probably stress, right? That's causing you to go to all of these things. Then Ashley, you're dealing with all of your emotions and Dave can't help you with those, right? He's drowning in his own way. So in the middle of that, then you find out that Dave is struggling with porn, but you didn't, that wasn't on your radar at all.
It wasn't. I think, you know, and I think most couples can agree with this. Like, I think sometimes we know something's off.
Yeah.
In our relationship, whether it's with our spouse or with ourselves, but sometimes we can't pinpoint it because we're either blind to it because we want to be blind to it, or we just really don't know. And I was at that point where I knew myself what I was dealing with personally, but I felt like something that attracted me to Dave when we first met was his, I would call him honest eyes. Do you remember me always saying that to you? And I love that. And I mean, both of us put a high, you know, even with our kids till this day, we have a high value on honesty in our family and with each other. And it's like, I could tell he was being honest with you about most things, but it was like every now and then I would get this, and I'm a pretty intuitive person too. Almost like I wish I wasn't so intuitive.
She's so intuitive.
But I can know something's off.
Like,
and
he'll ask me if something's wrong. And even if I don't think there is, I'm like, well, I don't
maybe
think
it
so,
is.
But you're better at
like,
seeing
let me second
things.
Guess. Let me assess. Right.
And he does, you know, but I would, and I think there were a couple of times where I would say, hey, are you okay? And he'd be like, yeah. And I could tell you weren't totally okay. But I mean, we were dealing with so much at the time.
Right.
I didn't dig deeper.
Yeah.
And so, you know, I guess, you know, somewhere in that time, I can't even exactly know when, how many, you were asking how many years in, but it was in those early 5 years. I would say in the first 5 years, I went to our basement. We lived in like this 100-year-old home that we had redone together. And that's the other thing. We decided let's redo a dilapidated house and flip it and then
that
live
won't
in it.
Be stressful.
But anyway.
And live with my parents for a while while we were doing
it. For a while.
It,
so.
Yeah.
I'm going through my master's program for teaching at the time and pregnant. That was great. But, you know, we had a lot going on, but, and we're grateful that they even let us do that while we're redoing the house. But we're in this house and they had this real dingy basement where for some reason had the best internet in the house. This is like when old internet times where we didn't have Wi-Fi and all that kind of stuff. And so I go to work on my program stuff down there. And I think we didn't even have a laptop. It was like a clunky computer. And I go to turn it on and like right away there's sites, like there's these porn sites. And I'm like, what in the world? You know? And my first thought literally was, it wasn't Dave, like, oh my gosh, Dave is looking at this. My first thought was, what creeper broke into our house and got on porn sites in my dingy basement? Like, that's literally what I thought. Cause you know, you just don't, we just hold our spouse on a pedestal a lot of times. And that was me with Dave. And it was like very quickly, I feel like the Holy Spirit kind of woke me up and was like, this is what Dave has been looking at. This is the thing. This is what you're seeing in his eyes when you ask him if he's okay. And you can tell he's totally not, you know, there's something wrong. And I just, I mean, of course I was like horrified, disgusted, shocked, mad, sad, confused, like all these different feelings. And I just knew that I had to hear it from him. Like I needed him to tell me that he did this. And so I called him at work and he answered and I just said, hey, sweetie. And then literally all I said was, do you have something that you need to tell me? And he immediately knew what I was talking about. He wasn't like, what are you talking about? I mean, immediately, I think you said something like, you found it. I'm so sorry. And it's almost like you've described it, like you didn't have the courage to tell me at that time. You almost wanted to be caught, you know? I mean, you didn't want me to see that and feel hurt.
Well, I was sick of the cycle.
But
I didn't have the courage to do what needed to be done and come clean just right on my own. But when it was found, I felt some relief, honestly. Even though I hated that she had seen that. I hated that she had been wounded. But on the other hand, I was relieved that it was finally out in the open and we could start the process of moving forward. And it was a process. I mean, I had at least one relapse. I mean, it was like deeply embedded in my mind. I've never had a chemical addiction, but you know, walking through addiction with friends who have, like the process I was working through to try to break free from that felt similar in a lot of ways to what my friends have described of finding sobriety.
Yeah, and neurologically, it is very similar.
Right. Yeah.
Yeah.
I felt that. But she's the hero. Jesus and Ashley are the hero of that story, you know, coming through that and the grace and the wisdom that she showed as she was healing herself to be able to walk alongside me was really, Amazing.
So practically, what comes next?
Whether or not you realize it, you come into marriage with baggage. Things that cause you to act, react, and interact in negative and unhealthy ways. And oftentimes those things are revealed in marriage because marriage acts like a mirror to the worst parts of who you are. But we don't have to stop there because marriage can also be an invitation into deeper healing. In my book, Choosing Marriage, I want to talk to you about the 8 choices you can make today to begin healing your relationships by healing yourself first. We're going to do some real talk about intimacy issues, conflict management, communication hangups, family of origin baggage, personality differences, and so much more to help you become healthy and create a healthy marriage. This book isn't just for married couples. It's also for anyone who wants to get healthy in preparation for marriage. At the end of every chapter, you'll find questions for couples, but also questions for singles to help you get healthy standing alone. We're taking the best of psychology and relationship counseling and pairing it with God's truth in Choosing Marriage, why it has to start with "We is greater than me." If you haven't read it yet, pick up a copy today anywhere books are sold.
Now that there's a confession, you know, and you know the extent of it, what I have couples do is sit down and have a full disclosure conversation, which is, hey, yeah, Here's everything that I've done since we've been married. Here's some things I've done before we were married that you don't even know about. And not necessarily in detail, like this website or this type of woman, or, you know, not necessarily those details or names, but more a general, like I always say, if your sexual history is a book or a chapter in a book, you don't have to go through line by line, but you do need to give a chapter summary. Like, here's what happened, so that nothing is just out of left field. Nothing takes you by surprise. So what did that look like for you in that season?
Well, I mean, I did get very honest. Now most of, outside of the porn, I felt like I'd been really honest about anything else. So kind of the way that porn and any form of kind of sexual sin had worked together for me, I guess it had started for me with a childhood trauma. My first sexual experience is when I was 5, and it was with a female cousin of mine who was the same age, and it was initiated by her in a way that, looking back, I realized that she almost certainly was being abused. For her to just know to initiate that, she was having someone do that to her, which is heartbreaking. But we were very close. We were buddies, and we were just, you know, babies basically, but just kind of figuring things out and doing this sexual play, which I felt like was wrong, but I didn't really have the maturity to understand why it was wrong. But it was something that I did feel some like shame over, and we would try to hide. And then to complicate that, when I was in first grade, my cousin Tina was tragically, she died in a drowning accident. And so she was, you know, not only this sexual experience, but she was really my best friend. And so I had all of this like survivor guilt. Of course, I didn't know how to articulate any of that, but it threw me. Like, I mean, it really, really messed with me. And, you know, I don't know. Like, I just kind of carried some of that. And then when I got to like puberty and you started noticing girls and all of that, like my kind of sexual thoughts were sort of, I hadn't looked at porn yet, but they were sort of shaped by this sort of shame and confusion I'd felt from back when I was like 5, 6 years old. Then I got a little bit older. I got exposed to pornography at a friend's house, you know, back when it was magazines and not computer, you know, his dad had this big stash, and then that, you know, that planted images in my mind that, I just couldn't get rid of. I knew I was old enough to know this isn't wrong, this isn't good, but it was so intoxicating that, when I had the opportunity, I found myself falling back into it. And then I believed the lie that, like, well, as long as I'm just looking and not doing anything else, you know, with another person, then it's not really that bad. And one day I'll be married and then I won't be tempted anymore. And, you know, Satan wants, loves us to believe these lies.
When you were, we were also gripping purity culture.
Yeah.
So you
yeah,
had so those, you know, we make these kind of agreements with God.
Acts, right.
You
know? Right.
And, yeah. And so that was like, okay, that's what I'm going to do. But, you know, sin always gets you to keep compromising. Right. And so then it was like, well, all right, well then, you know, well, it's not just porn, then it's masturbation too. But, you know, that's still not really, you know, your mind's then not really that bad. There's not another person involved. And then, you know, get to college and getting in some relationships. And I'm thinking, well, I'm not going to cross this line or this line or this line. But over time, those boundaries eroding away and me kind of justifying taking the, you know, the Bill Clinton mindset. Well, it's not technically sex if it's not actually intercourse. And so maybe, you know, these other ways of release would be okay and wouldn't even really be sex. And I kind of let myself, you know, believe those lies. And it was unhealthy and it was wrong. And thankfully, like I'd broken free from really that mindset and even from porn when Ashley came into the picture. So that I really was in a healthy place when we got together. And I'm so thankful for that because we wouldn't have gotten together because she's not going to go for somebody who's not healthy. And I'm thankful that I was then, but it was painful for me even then to like, I didn't tell her about the porn, but I did confess that I'd made these mistakes in relation that I'd not had intercourse, but I had crossed some real boundaries that I knew and I had to admit were sinful and wrong and that I, was sorry about that. And that was a sin against God and a sin against, you know, it's them and a sin against her as my future wife. And I felt terrible about that, but you know, she was so full of grace. And so we'd had some of those conversations yeah. leading into marriage, but with the porn, I went back and kind of told her that whole history and how it had shaped my thinking and how it had just embedded into my mind. And we, you know, we worked through it and they weren't pretty.
Did she know about some of those things like from when you were young and, all the sexual experiences from when you were young, some of that trauma?
You know, I don't even know. I mean, I obviously knew about Tina in your life and as a family. But I don't know if you really talked about the sexual stuff with Tina till later.
Yeah, I don't think that I did.
Because I don't think he equated it to
right.
that talk you have with the person you're going to marry about your past experiences.
Right.
Yeah. I just think it was so far back that, you know, it was almost like the trauma of her drowning and losing her was greater in your mind, you know? And I want to mention this too. Tina not only passed away herself, she passed away along with her father in this drowning incident. So this was a major family tragedy. Wow. Okay. And then you put the sexual things happening on top of that. But he did, you know, gosh, I mean, probably around that time is when you told me about Tina. And I want to say, because people, whenever we share about the porn, I have so many, and we share about it a lot. Like even from the stage, we've had our parents in the audience sharing yeah. about this. It's not comfortable
That's
to talk
an
about.
Awkward day,
it is an awkward day, but you know, we talk about it because it is so important. And it, sometimes it is maybe not the thing that ends up taking out a marriage, but it's one of the things. And it's that compounding effect yeah. where they're like, I'm out, like you've done too much, you know? And I have wives write me and they say, how did you ever look at him the same again? Or how did you ever want to have sex with him again? Like, how did you, you know, I just can't get past it. I mean, I just got a message the other day from this heartbroken wife. And I mean, I get it, but she was just so angry. And people will often, and I know Deborah, you can relate. They will write us very descriptive things about their feelings because we're not necessarily in person with them. And so it was just very raw. And I think I was there in the beginning. I mean, I had all the feelings. It wasn't, I don't want to, you know, misrepresent our situation. I was very angry, but I want to be honest. Like I think in that moment, again, I was so tired and like so broken. I mean, just so broken. One of the most broken times in my life where I had gone kind of myself through an identity crisis, like what we go through in adolescence. I feel like mine was enlightened. I had a very, and I won't go into too much detail, but just a codependent relationship with my mom that I didn't even know was codependent until I left the house. And she wasn't ready for me leaving, and I wasn't ready to leave. And I didn't know that this would be so hard. And so I'm dealing with that. And then the depression and anxiety, which is related to that, that when I find this, I mean, it was kind of like, well, here's another thing, you know? And I think too, we both were so broken that I feel like God used it to say, you know what, let me put back these pieces for you.
I think
like,
we were both so weary
and exhausted, exhausted,
broken and emotionally. Exhausted, that it was kind of like her emotional response was a little bit muted because neither of us just had the capacity to show emotion.
It was
sort of just like, well, this
you were already in a low season.
Exactly.
So how do you find the strength in a low season to even say, well, now we got to do the work? Because people always tell me, you know, Deborah, the work of healing is so hard.
Yeah.
And it is hard, but I always respond by saying it's so hard, but the work of living unhealed is harder. The burden of continuing to live unhealed is more work. Mm-hmm. So how did you find it in each of you to say, okay, we need to start doing the work? And then what did the work look like?
I know for me personally, I remember thinking, because kind of with the family drama, you know, extended family drama, and then with Dave going through what he went through, I think we reached a point where we're like, it's literally just us and God who are, and of course we reach out to counselors and things too, but like,
so was that the first point where you decided to go to counseling as a couple?
Gosh, no, we went early on in our marriage to deal with the, in-law problems.
Yeah.
And then at that point, Dave was receiving, he became like, I don't even know exactly which ministry, but you went through some like support group type stuff online. In that time, and I don't know if it was before or after I found the porn, but the kind of the straw that broke the camel's back is I had a horrible anxiety. I mean, I was having anxiety attacks, but I had this really, really awful one in the middle of the night and was physically getting ill, like going to the bathroom and having to like throw up out of the toiling inside of me. And I remember I hadn't really been totally honest with you how dark it got. He's a real, really, really good sleeper. And he would sleep through all of my watching TV at the wee hours, like watching Christian television at the wee hours, just praying and crying and then sometimes getting sick and having these anxiety attacks. I mean, it was very much like a toiling and all, I mean, for days on end. And it just was really bad that one night. And I really felt like it was twofold. One, I just needed your help. Like I desperately just needed support. But two, I really felt convicted. I felt convicted by the Holy Spirit. Like he's your husband. He's been honest with you. You've got to be honest with him. Like you aren't supposed to go through this alone. And so I woke him up out of a dead sleep and told him about my anxiety and also the dark thoughts. I mean, this was after the birth of our first child. He's probably maybe 6 to 9 months at this time. So, I mean, very much a lingering postpartum. I had already had depression. I didn't even know really. And I just remember being like having really like thinking, I don't know if I want to be here. Like, I don't know, not if I want to be here. I want to be here, but I don't know if I should be here. Like, I don't know if I am deserving of being part of this family. Like, I really had these plaguing thoughts. And so I told you all about it. And he was so kind to just listen, and he didn't turn the other way. I think him looking me in the eyes and not being scared of what I was saying really meant a lot to me, because I was scaring myself. And again, I think the brokenness, we were both so broken that we both just came to that point where we're like, it's us and God. And like, there's only up from here. Like we can get through this. It's going to be long. But I mean, we really did hold on to, like we had hope still.
Yeah. What's interesting is that in a way you didn't see his brokenness as more than yours, because you had your own brokenness too. Right. And I wonder if there's something to that with that separates people who recover from this type of problem, specifically porn in marriage, and those who don't, is the ability to see, what you did was really messed up, but here's also where I'm messed up, so that I am not holier than you. Mm-hmm. We're just different and we both have to heal.
Yeah.
Yes.
And I think sometimes today we want to vilify the man who's struggling with sexual addiction without having any role for the woman. But there's a role. The role could be boundaries. The role could be asserting yourself. The role could be sharing more of what you need. The role could be giving more feedback. There's roles that we each have. For there to be two people in a relationship that's unhealthy, there's usually two people offering some sort of unhealthy ingredients. And so I think it's really important that you were able to kind of see your own brokenness. And honestly, I wonder if in God's grace, he allowed it to come up during a season of your own brokenness versus a season where you were just doing great and thriving. Obviously, the two go together because when you're down, he's down, and there's you're more susceptible to these issues. But I also think the flip side of that is when you're both down and these hard things come up, you're less likely to judge your spouse and more likely to support them.
Yes.
Yes. Yeah.
I think that's absolutely true.
Oh, yeah. I think that's right on the money, Deborah. I think couples that even in our work now, working with couples and seeing all different kinds of struggles and the ones that are really thriving, I think that mutual grace, that mutual support of being willing to, you know, help each other up, offer consistent grace to the spouse, be honest with our own self-assessments and realize like, well, I've got stuff too. You know, when we take on that mindset of like, well, it's all their fault. You're doing this, you're always doing this, you're never doing that. And we make ourselves either the hero or the victim in the story. It's never going to be balanced, and we're sabotaging our own healing.
And we're not talking about enabling an addiction.
Sure.
The difference here is that you had deep conviction and you wanted to start doing the work of healing. And it sounds like you got plugged in as soon as you could and shared with people and, you know, started doing the work. So now that you're doing the work, it's up to Ashley if she's going to just hold on to that hurt forevermore or allow you to move into healing.
It's so true. You know, Dave, usually he can explain this a lot better than me, but in short, he always talks about how trust and forgiveness are different things. I think a lot of times we, you know, as a married couple, when our spouse has sinned against us, it is hard. And I think, you know, when we're working with couples, oftentimes they'll say, I don't know if I can ever forgive him, or I don't know if I can ever forgive her. But what I really think it is trust. It's like, I don't know. We kind of weave those two together. But, you know, forgiveness, as Christians, you know, God calls us to forgive because he first forgave us. And forgiveness isn't saying, oh, you know, the fact that you were addicted to porn, no big deal. Like, it's not saying that. It's saying, you know what? I'm going to let God deal with you because I trust God in this. I'm going to trust God with the consequences. But then trust is something where, you know, Jimmy Evans, the head of XO Marriage, the organization we work for, he says, you know, trust is lost in buckets and it's built with drops. And so Dave, you know, poured out a bucket of trust, maybe several buckets of trust, you know, and I think he knew he's going to have to rebuild my trust in him by his trustworthy actions, like by showing me I'm not looking at porn. You know, for us, it looked like having, and we still to this day have filtering software on all our devices. It was, you know, not ever going to meetings with a woman by himself. It was never, you know, it was even what we watch on TV, like anything that would be even the least bit like pornographic. And back then, I mean, nowadays there's even more of that. But then there were some shows that were maybe a little racy. And it was like, we can't watch those shows. We're not going to give any kind of foothold here. You know, he's trying to be free of this. And he, little by little, it's like he would go out of his way to call me a lot throughout the day. We would be open, you know, especially in those early days and months. I would ask, like, did you look at porn today? Or did you feel like looking at porn today? Yeah. And just kind of assessing where he is. And he would be honest with me. And over time, he rebuilt that trust. And
well, and I think you mentioned the habits, a lot of the healthy habits that we still have now, you know, it's just out of 17 years later, whatever it's been.
Yeah.
They were formed in those early years of healing, of checking in a lot. You know, we still call each other a lot throughout the day. We don't let there be large gaps of not connecting, of transparency, of, you know, we've never had passwords that the other one doesn't know. We still have porn blocking software on all the family devices, you know, but just living with that kind of transparency and communication that was started then kind of in a response to trauma and in a way to bring healing, we found that like this isn't just short-term stuff. A lot of this are things that we need to implement long-term, and they've been really healthy for us. And mm-hmm. so I'm thankful for that aspect of it. I wouldn't want to go through it again. And I'm so, you know, I feel terrible that it happened in the first place, but that is a positive that came in the aftermath.
People are always asking me, where do I find a good counselor? At the Debra Falada Counselors Network, we want to help you navigate through any difficult season you might be facing. We want to help you find relief from the pain and stress of the present and healing from the wounds of the past in order to find freedom, joy, and peace in the life you're living today. Our team of trained, licensed professional counselors will walk by your side and give you the tools you need to face any personal or relational issue you might be up against today. With an integrative approach, we'll guide you with truths from God's Word paired with the best of modern counseling and psychology to help you get unstuck and live freely. There's no better time for healing than today. Book a session with one of our counselors at debrafalada.com/counseling and get started on your journey of healing from the inside out.
Interestingly enough, if you didn't put those healthy habits in, you probably would be going through it again. So it's like the difference. But what I appreciate is the dual process of external boundaries while you're doing the internal work. Right. I think sometimes people want to just start with the external boundaries. Like, okay, I just found out that you're struggling with porn. You're not allowed to do this. You're not allowed to go here. You're not allowed to do this anymore. But there's no internal work.
Right.
And then the external boundaries are not going to hold up when the pressure comes, right? Unless there's the internal work, the scaffolding is just temporary while you're doing the internal work so that you can be strong against the pressure. And I think for most people, it's figuring out what the pressure even is. What is the pressure? What has made me susceptible to porn? Porn isn't about sex. Porn is about an underlying inability to deal with some emotion. And what is that emotion? And where do I go when I feel it? And why do I feel it? And guilt and shame and trauma and pain and loneliness and disconnect and all of these things underneath the surface that have nothing to do with pictures on a screen and everything to do with the state of our emotional world that sounds like was kind of part of that process for you of starting to go back and figure out your story and where things went wrong and what narratives that you've been carrying that weren't healthy. So it's interesting when you guys talk about being in counseling and being in all of these programs and all of these things, because I think the average Christian looks at all the other Christians around them and they don't realize how many people get to this point where they really hit rock bottom. Mm-hmm. So Dave, I want to ask you this. You know, you got caught, but you were glad to get caught. What would you tell somebody right now who's listening and they're like, I have a secret and I know it's not good for me and I haven't been caught, but I worry about it every day. What would you tell them if you could go back, if you could look them in the eye about what they should do next?
I would just say, listen, I promise you that life is so much better when you get what's in the darkness out into the light. And I know that the thought of that is terrifying. And I think that's how the enemy really tries to work against this, is trying to convince you that telling the truth is the worst thing that you could do. And that at all costs, you have to protect this secret. But the truth is, when you bring it out into the light, it doesn't have power over you anymore. And life's so much better, guys. Life is so much better when you don't have to keep the secret. God didn't design us to carry around that kind of baggage. You know, we need to lay it down. We need to have the courage to lay it down. And I wish I'd had that courage, but I am so thankful that I was caught. And I'm so thankful that it put us on a path of living secret free. I would never want to go back. And so whatever your secret might be, whether it's whatever it is, just bring it out into the light, get the help that you need. I promise life will be so much better because of it.
Yeah. And confession expedites the process of healing.
Yes.
Versus getting caught. right?
Sure.
Getting caught, you got to start in the negatives. But with confession, it sort of gives you a little bit of a head start because you start to build trust just by confessing. Sure, you're breaking trust from the past, but you're rebuilding. You're starting to put drops back in the bucket through the process of confessing rather than holding on to the secret is continuing to let the water just pour out.
Exactly.
And so you're in the positive with confession, even though it's not easy, it's so freeing. And I've seen so many people find freedom from confessing. And I also want to just practically speaking, you mentioned a relapse, okay? So what does healing look like realistically? Does that mean that you never looked at porn again? Does that mean that you never had a lustful thought again? Does that mean that a woman has never caught your eye and you had an unhealthy thought? I mean, I want people to kind of understand the realistic version of healing.
Yeah.
I wish I could tell you that it just a switch was flipped and all of a sudden the temptation was gone and my mind was totally restored. But most things in life that we spend a long time getting into end up taking a long time to fully get out of.
Yes.
You know, if we're trying to lose 100 pounds, you know, we didn't gain that extra 100 pounds all at once. We're not going to lose it all at once. But all at once you can make a decision to start living in a different way and moving toward health. And so that's what we did. And like I said, there was at least one relapse. There was, my mind was so clouded with that imagery that I really had to go through a long process of like the scripture says, renewing your mind, putting God's truth in there. And again, I'd love to say, you know, I could just read a Bible verse and then not have a lustful thought all day, but it was a constant battle and it had nothing to do with not being wildly attracted to my wife. I think sometimes wives feel this guilt that somehow like they're not enough and that's why their husband went to porn. But porn affects men and women. It's not just a male issue. It's men and women. And it has nothing to do with their spouses, you know, not doing something. It's a sin that each one of us that falls into, we fall into it through our own sin. And we wound the people around us. We wound our spouse. But it's certainly never a spouse's fault that you fall into porn. But I had to work through the healing of getting those images out of my head. Even after, you know, I said, okay, I'm done with porn. I still realized that I had this physical addiction to self-release through masturbation, which had been fueled
porn.
Right. Had been fueled by the porn for all those years. But even after, I thought that like once I stopped the porn, that the urge to do that would stop as well. And it didn't. And so I continued on in that, you know, feeling like, well, maybe this isn't that bad. Or I mean, maybe this isn't even a sin. I don't know. But I can tell you that, you know, masturbation, completely separate from the porn issue, it trains us to be very self-focused.
Yeah.
In looking at sex as a very self-gratifying, self-focused act, which is going to ultimately harm you and harm the marriage. And so as God opened my eyes to that as I was healing, then I really, you know, did the difficult work of breaking free from that as well. And I'm so thankful now on the other side. Like anytime we feel like an addiction or a compulsion to anything that's not healthy, it's stealing from us. It is stealing from us. It's pretend, you know, it's the lie is that it's somehow enhancing, but
it's a prison.
It's a prison and it does nothing but steal.
Yeah.
And so I'm so thankful to be free. And I'm so thankful for this amazing, beautiful, godly woman who had the courage and the wisdom to walk that messy road of healing with me all those years ago. And I mean, we would not be doing what we're doing now. There's a good chance we would not even be married now had she not had the grace and the strength and wisdom to respond the way that she did when I was at my worst.
Well, I think what you said is really important for women to know. This is not a deficit in attraction.
Right.
This is a deficit in emotional management.
Yes.
This is a deficit in emotional health. So it's not about you and your attraction. It's about your spouse and their inability to deal with all the things going on inside of them. And so even just knowing that can be helpful in the process of healing. That doesn't mean you don't struggle, right? That doesn't mean you never feel like insecure or need affirmation. Another thing that I tell couples when they're walking through this is anytime she needs affirmation, she needs to let you know, hey, I am feeling insecure right now. I'm feeling jealous. A gorgeous woman just walked by and I thought you looked at her. I don't know if you did. I need some affirmation. I need assurance. I need you to let me know. And so that's where the husband can just pour out affirmation over those hard places. So, okay. So now we're going to get real. Okay. You guys are how many years now, like past this? Plenty of years, right?
Yeah.
But do you still have moments of insecurities, fear, like deep down, like second guessing something or feeling you need to clarify? Do you have moments where you get triggered? And if so, how do you navigate them?
I mean, yeah. So we've been married 22 years. We've probably been, I mean, you've been free from porn.
Yeah, a long time.
Almost two decades, I would say. But I mean, I would say for us, like or for me personally, I know that there's been times throughout the time afterward where if there was a woman who he was working with who really dressed, you know, in a certain way that really accentuated her features, that would make me feel insecure. And Dave has never, like, I think I didn't notice the porn, like, or even consider that porn could have been an issue in those early years of our marriage, because thankfully he's not been one of those guys that whenever a beautiful woman walks by, he just stares her down. He really, you have control over your eyes. And I mean, you can't help but notice someone beautiful, but you know, we get to choose whether or not we stare at them and then lust about them or whatever. But I remember there's been times where he's worked with people and or people in the church. You know, he's a pastor. Women love to get real handsy with a pastor. It kills me. I hate it. Even if they're an old lady, like I literally am like, stop it. Okay. But they do. They get real. And there's been times where, and I'm just real open with them. And I'm like, because here's my thing is like, I'm like, you may not have that intention at all, but you don't know what these other people's intentions are. You don't know what these other women are thinking about. So it's like, don't even give them any kind of inclination that you're into that. And one example, I remember we were talking to this woman who I knew because I had kind of, for lack of a better word, like mentored her, counseled her, I guess, in more of a pastoral capacity. And I knew that she was in a really vulnerable state in her marriage. And we were having this conversation and Dave was being so complimentary of her, like in a very respectful way, but he was like, yes, you know, you have done such a great job on this. You're so intelligent. We are so proud of you. It was very wee. But I could see in her eyes how much she liked it. She really liked it.
Ashley's had to help me. She's great at seeing my blind spots and not to interrupt, but she's helped me see that like, I'm an encourager by nature. Like I love to compliment. I love to make people light up if I can, you know, whether it's through, you know, through a speaking or a sermon or one-on-one. And she helped me see the blind spot of like, I've got to be really careful with giving compliments.
Yeah.
If I'm talking one-on-one to a woman, even out, like in an open space, because even if I mean absolutely nothing other than just wanting to encourage,
just being kind,
that can be taken a different way. And she's helped me to see that. And she's totally right.
Yeah.
And I've seen how like I didn't see that as a boundary that needed to be there in the past. But it definitely is one. And so
I think the boundary that you're talking about is less, it's even less because it's dangerous towards you and the other woman. It's actually more of a boundary because it restores, it puts more drops in your bucket with Ashley.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Because I do trust Dave, but my thing is, I want us to be beyond reproach.
Yeah.
And I think that after walking through the porn thing, and he's never, I mean, Dave has been faithful. I've never even had an inkling of like impropriety or like just, I've never even had that. But I, as a woman and being intuitive, I just can tell sometimes I'm like, and not that I'm not like, oh, hold back a compliment from this woman who needs a compliment. That's not what I'm saying. Yeah. I'm saying, watch what kind of compliments you give. And when you get too specific, it's a red flag. And I've had moments where I've been complimented too specifically. And I remember one time I was on a worship team. One of the guys complimented me real specifically about a blue sweater and how it brought out the blue in my eyes and this and that. And I went home and I said, he needs to watch his compliments because if he's not careful, he's going to find himself in an affair. And sure enough, he did find himself in an affair and now he's divorced. But it's like, and actually two marriages were destroyed in that affair. And I get real passionate about this because I think it's something that people just think that'll never happen to me. It's just a car ride. It's just a lunch. It's just a compliment. But it's like, I think, and especially in ministry, how many times do we have ministry folks who've been brought down? I mean, our first station where we both, you know, I was on staff too with you for a time, but Dave's first time as a pastor, the head pastor and our worship pastor, who's a woman, who was a woman, you know, they had an affair, and it just,
she's still a woman,
nearly busted up, nearly busted up our church. But and we were only in our early 20s then. And I just, it will never leave me because,
it was because of
compromised behavior.
It
started with compliments. I'm telling you, I watched it unfold as a young person, not knowing what it was leading to. So I just, that's something.
Well, here's what I think you're saying. I think deep down underneath the surface, there's usually trauma. There's usually things that haven't been dealt with. And what comes up above the surface are these type of compromised boundaries, these type of things where people aren't thinking about limits, boundaries, healthy, unhealthy, emotional boundaries, spiritual boundaries. So these are the fruit that take root and start to affect people, but really they're rooted in these unhealed wounds, these lack of boundaries, this trauma underneath the surface. Because, I mean, at the end of the day, if Dave said, Deborah, I love your brown sweater. I mean, it is what it is, right? Thank you, Dave. Yeah. I appreciate that. But it's because it's coming from a healthy place, right? So you're trying to live a life where the fruit is proof of what's going on underneath the surface. And when what's going on underneath the surface is healthy, there's a good chance that the fruit's going to look different. And you're not going to compliment something above and beyond because there's no need to. You notice it and you move on. And so I think the more boundaries that you have, and here's why I'm saying this. I think some people think, well, just having all these boundaries is the solution, but that's not the solution. The solution is getting to the root and healing that. And the overflow of that is healthy boundaries. And I also think when there has been a high level break in trust, it has to be met with high level boundaries. That's the only option. And for you all, having a high level break in trust has to be met with high level boundaries. So, again, for people who are listening and they're like, well, that sounds legalistic. It's not legalistic because it's not about doing things to save your marriage. It's about doing things to protect your marriage while you're doing the inner work that saves your marriage.
It's so true.
Yeah, that's a great distinction.
You know, I've seen just in the years now that we've been together and we've done ministry together and just obviously our friends and just different people we've done life with, I would say, you know, even when we were in the early years of our marriage, I really admired those couples that had those, like you said, the healthy boundaries that are to protect, not to be legalistic, not to be weird or anything, but just, I really admired that. And I thought, you know, it takes effort to keep those boundaries, but I know for us, being honest and just having some of these, I mean, and to some people that it may be like silly, and I know it depends on maybe your job or where you are in your season of life, but, they've really helped us. And they, like you said, Deborah, it builds those buckets and drops in the bucket. And
that's what I think it is more than anything. Yeah. Right now, I think it's less about you worried that Dave's going to do something and more about him continuing to add drops in your bucket.
Yeah.
You know, if him not complimenting a woman specifically, it's not because it's going to lead him to sin with the woman, but what it is doing is it's causing him to put more drops in your bucket. I trust you. I honor you. I want my compliments to go to you. It's not necessary for me to put drops in anybody else's bucket, but yours. And I think that's the beauty of it. So, you know, it does give you freedom, like to know that if you compliment somebody, it's not wrong. But the point underneath all of this is, you know, all these actions are showing your spouse that they're your priority and that you're building trust with them and them alone. And all of these habits kind of keep you safe since you've done the internal work and continue to do it. And I love that about you guys.
Oh, well, thank you.
You're a good team.
Hey, you're amazing at what you do. And thanks for all the people you're helping, us included.
Yeah.
For just using your gift to help bring insight where it's most powerful and most needed. And so, yeah.
I really hope that the people who are listening, the big takeaway from today is that you have to pair external boundaries with internal work.
Yes.
You have to get to the root of where the shame comes from, and the sexual template. Where did that begin, and why, and what does sex mean to me, and why, and because, you know, even in marriage, sometimes you have a person who maybe isn't acting out, but they have a high sex drive, and they think they just have a high sex drive, but really that sex drive is a reflection of all of these other things going on underneath the surface that they need, all these other emotional things. So again, emotional health. And thank you for modeling that. Thank you all for joining me. So tell me real quick, where can people connect with you? Tell us about what you're doing right now, your marriage ministry, what books you're writing. Like, how can people learn more from you and your story?
Sure. I would say you can follow us on Instagram at Dave and Ashley Willis. Our Naked Marriage podcast is something where if they want to get more information on anything and all things marriage, we get really honest on there. You can go and listen to the Naked Marriage podcast wherever you get your podcasts. We also have a parenting podcast called Parenting Uncovered. And as far as books, our latest book is Married into the Family, where we do talk about in-law issues. And it's, we actually share our full story there, but using different names out of respect for the parties involved, but in other stories too. I think people who are going through difficulties with their in-law relationships will really find solidarity and practical help in that book.
Yeah.
But we have lots of books. They can go to Amazon or exomarriage.com.
Yeah. And exomarriage.com that Ashley just mentioned is our ministry's website. It's kind of the one-stop place for everything we're doing. Plus the rest of, we're part of a team, and the team has a lot of great resources, many of them free.
Yes.
They can help in any aspect related to marriage. So check that out.
I love it. Thank you guys. So grateful to have you. Thank you for the work that you're doing and for leading by example.
Thanks, Deborah. We love and appreciate all that you do.
We do.
And I do, for the record, love the brown sweater.
It is a very nice
Thank you so much. Take care, guys. Trust is lost in buckets and built with drops. Listen, that was one of the quotes you heard on today's episode with Dave and Ashley Willis. And you might be out there in a marriage and you are dealing with pornography, the habit of pornography, or maybe it's actually become an addiction and something that you're really struggling with. And if that's you, I want to encourage you that there is hope. There is healing. If you're the spouse of someone who is struggling, the first thing that I want you to look for is a heart of repentance, a heart that is willing to take ownership of the problem and then take next steps. It's not okay to just apologize if that apology is not paired with action. And so I encourage you to set up some boundaries, some things that you expect moving forward. I would suggest that would include some counseling work, some group accountability, a filtering system. And listen, if you need help in this area, we would be honored to walk alongside of you. Our team of counselors can give you the tools you need to figure out how to get out of this, how to pursue healing and move forward. Because trust is not just something that's given. Trust is something that has to be earned. But I also believe if you're in a marriage where there is a repentant heart and a spouse who is willing to take steps in the direction of healing, there is real hope here. I have seen so many couples turn this around and seek healing and change together. They've had to learn how to do their life a little differently. They've had to learn how to set boundaries and have expectations of one another. They've had to learn to check in and pursue individual healing. You know, I always say that the opposite of addiction, whether it's an addiction to porn or anything else, is not sobriety. The opposite of addiction is healthy connection with God, with self, and with others. And this is the journey of healing, to learn how to have a healthy connection with myself, with God, and with others, to learn what are my triggers that are causing me to run to pornography, to numb whatever is going on underneath the surface. What is porn doing for me? How is it serving me? And how can I begin to do it differently? Again, if you're a couple walking through this right now, we would be honored and privileged to help you along. Book a session with someone from our team at DeborahFaleta.com/counseling and let us help you get started on your journey of healing. I want to take a minute and tell you about some upcoming things we have going on. I'm going to be speaking at a few upcoming events. The first one is February 6th, Reset Your Sex Life. It's an online event where I will be joined by my friend and co-author, Gary Thomas, and we're going to be talking about how to reset your sex life in marriage. The next event after that is February 11th, and this is a live Galentine's Day event in New Holland, Pennsylvania. If you want to come and learn about emotional health and why it matters, join us in New Holland, PA on February 11th. And the last event coming up in February is February 24th, where I'm doing a half-day Choosing Marriage Conference. This is also a live event at the Worship Center in Lancaster, Pennsylvania. It's 9 a.m. to 12:30 p.m. It's just a half-day marriage conference where we're going to be talking about choosing marriage. You can learn more about these events and register today by going to DeborahFaleta.com and making your way to my speaking page. You'll find all the registration links. I hope to see you at some of these upcoming events. Thanks so much for tuning into the podcast and giving me your time today. If you're enjoying what we're doing here, leave us a 5-star rating and review and help us get the podcast out to others. If you want to go deeper with getting healthy and making healthy relationships, go check out some of my books, True Love Dates, Choosing Marriage, Love in Every Season, Are You Really Okay, Married Sex, or my newest book, Reset. You can find more information about all of those, as well as hundreds of articles and courses, as well as the Deborah Faleta Counselors Network, over at my blog, truelovedates.com, or my website, deborahfaleta.com. I love connecting with you online, so find me on Facebook or Instagram at Deborah Faleta. Send me a DM and tell me your story. If you have a question on your mind or a guest suggestion, reach out to me at truelovedates.com/talktome and let me know what's on your mind. I'm Deborah Faleta, and it was so great being with you today. I can't wait to talk with you again next week. I'll see you then.